In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking about some Bears news, and we know the Super Bowl contenders, and we'll talk a little Bulls, a little Blackhawks, maybe a little baseball. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is going on right now. So make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swarski Sports sent you. Alex, we now know the participants in this year's Super Bowl. It will be the San Francisco Brock Purdy's versus the Kansas City Taylor Swift's. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, you remember the last time the Chiefs and the 49ers faced each other in the Super Bowl?
Yes.
You know, it was February of 2020, yes. And it was an election year. You remember what happened a month or so later?
Yes.
Let's not go through that again, please. But in all seriousness, I really like this matchup. I think that seeing Brock Purdy lead his team to a Super Bowl, it really is an amazing story. And, you know, you can watch and look at what Brock Purdy has done all year. And you can look at the highs, you can look at the lows. And, you know, obviously in the first halves of both playoff games, whether it was against the Packers or against the Lions this past week, you know, you saw some shakiness. But when the time came to lead his team to victory, he's delivered. And I think that's pretty remarkable. Meanwhile, you have Pat Mahomes making his fourth Super Bowl in the past 5 years. And a chance to win his third.
I want to say something, though. It was not the offense that led the Chiefs into the Super Bowl. It was that defense.
Right. I mean, I don't think the Chiefs even scored in the second half.
It was. I mean, what, they total 17 points?
Right. They won 17-10, right? It was 17-10. Yeah. And, I mean, basically what you saw was you saw the offense hum early in the game. They got their lead. The defense did its thing and Pat Mahomes didn't make any mistakes. That's kind of just how it happened.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I know the narrative is going to be, oh, to win a Super Bowl, to be a consistent contender, you need a Patrick Mahomes elite quarterback. And you know what? Like, that does solve a lot of things, but you know, you look and the only year that Pat Mahomes was in the Super Bowl and lost, it was the team with the better defense won that year. And this year, it wasn't his offense that led them to the Super Bowl from the AFC Championship. It was that defense. Defense is still important, and it has to come up big. And, you know, although everybody except for the Bears front office feels like the Bears should have gone with an offensive head coach, we've seen that corner start to turn where you don't automatically go with a young offensive or offensive mind to be your head coach. We're starting to see some defensive coaches getting hired again. That corner is turned. Doesn't mean I agree with that for the Bears and their situation, but you are starting to see that tide turning a little bit.
Well, you know, I think the other thing, too, is, you know, you talked about the defense. And yes, defense is very, very important still, obviously. And I feel like part of the culture that Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes create in Kansas City is, you know, on both sides of the ball, whether it's offense or it's defense. I mean, that team just, when the lights are brightest, that's when they shine. I mean, it's just they don't let the pressure get to them. They find ways. I mean, look at the week before. That was a shootout for most of that game in Buffalo. But when they needed to just take care of the game. They did. And they were able to win it on the road. It was the first time Pat Mahomes had gone on the road and won a playoff game. Now, I mean, if Pat Mahomes didn't already seal his legacy, he's heading to his fourth Super Bowl in 5 years, in a year in which he had to go on the road and beat Josh Allen and the guy who's going to be the MVP probably in Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, how many more boxes other than winning more Super Bowls do you have to check?
In every single year he's been the starter, he's gone to the AFC Championship.
Yeah, that's insane. And you look at the years that he didn't make it to the Super Bowl. Year one, they lost to Tom Brady and the Patriots in overtime. And listen, you lost to Tom Brady, the greatest to ever do it. Mm-hmm. Barely. And then...
And you know what? You are on pace to beat Tom Brady as the greatest.
Yeah, you are. Statistically, you are. I mean, it's
in
amazing.
Every single category, including Super Bowl rings.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And think about it, too. Remember the other AFC championship they lost in overtime? To Joe Burrow mm-hmm. and the upcoming Bengals. I mean, it's like every year he started, he's either been the Super Bowl or gone to overtime in the AFC championship. And this was the first AFC championship of all those he had to win it on the road.
True. True.
So I don't know about you, but I'm personally rooting for the 49ers. I want to see Purdy and George Kittle get a Super Bowl ring. But if I'm a betting man, I'm going with the Chiefs. I feel like until they don't win, it's just hard for me to bet against Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid and that team. And the fact that we've seen this defense play so good at times lately, I mean, you pair that with the play of Patrick Mahomes, and boy, that's tough. That's going to be real tough to beat. And, you know, Brock Purdy, here he is, Mr. Irrelevant, on the biggest stage in all of sports. The thing is, you played like crap, and I'm not just talking Brock Purdy. I talk about the team as a whole, the 49ers. They played like crap against the Packers in the first half. They came back and won. You played like absolute crap. I mean, you were getting bullied and manhandled by the Lions in the first half of the NFC Championship game. And it was looking like it was going to be a rout. And you came back and won. You can't do that against Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. You got to play him drive for drive. You can't dig yourself a big hole in the first half like you did against Green Bay or like you did against the Lions. I mean, Green Bay is a young upcoming team. The Lions were here for the first time in decades. Pat Mahomes, yeah, they've been there before. So you can't do that again.
I'm going to be rooting for the 49ers, like you said, for George Kittle, because he's a Bears fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to be rooting against Patrick Mahomes because I did not like what he did to Tucker, the kicker for the Ravens before the game.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a douchey move.
Yeah.
I did not like that. I will be rooting against him actively.
You know what? This is a prime example of when you're the upcoming team, everybody loves you. But then when you start to win and you get a little full of yourself, that tide turns. And you know what? I wish we could become that.
Yeah. I don't care that if they were the favorites but don't be the villain. Just don't become the villain. Like Tom Brady was that first Super Bowl. He was the Brock Purdy. And then he became the villain really quickly. And Patrick Mahomes has stayed fairly likable. And that was just a real douchey move. Like, you know, been one if he did it and kind of kicked it a little bit and then joked about it. I'm like, oh, okay, they're joking around. Fun.
Right.
No, he just kept, like, those that didn't see, you can look the video online, but the kicker of the Ravens was setting up a tee to warm up before the game. And he would have been next to Patrick Mahomes. And Mahomes kept kicking away this tee every time he would set it up and the guy would walk away. He would kick it away until finally he took it and just flung it. And I was just like, you know, I could tell you one thing for a fact. If Ray Lewis was still a player and on the Ravens, that would not have happened.
No, 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 no.
That would not have happened because he would have tore into Patrick Mahomes right there in pregame.
And probably on the field during the game.
Yep. And, you know, that was just a D-bag move. And, you know, hopefully the 49ers saw that and know to, you know, be ready to back up their own.
Well, like I said, you can't dig yourself a hole if you're the 49ers if you want to win. I mean, the last team in football you want to do that to is them, because they're not going to make a lot of mistakes. They're just not, especially at this stage of the game. And listen, we saw some seemingly lackluster moments from the Chiefs during the regular season throughout. But once they get to the playoffs, the pressure, just they feed off it. So when you get into this game, you know, you got to come out sharp. You got to come out strong. You got to put pressure on the opposition. And, you know, you have the personnel to defend. You know, the 49ers are a very, very good team. And you have personnel that can defend. And you have personnel that on offense can make plays. I mean, look at Christian McCaffrey. When he's healthy, he is one of the best to do it. And you got guys like Ayuk and Debo. And those guys are just invaluable weapons. And you got to get them going early on, because once you get them into a rhythm, it's really hard to stop. Look at the NFC Championship game. When the momentum turned, the 49ers just fed off that energy. When they started to feel it, they did not let up the rest of the game. They were humming. And, you know, everyone was getting into it. You know, you had George Kittle and you had, you know, Ayuk made that insane catch that deflected off former Bear Kendall Vildor's face, which frankly, that to me was the momentum changing play of the entire game. You could say it was the failed fourth down, but I think that play is what truly changed things. And you were able to take advantage of that. But again, you can't do that late in the game in the Super Bowl if you want to win.
I'm going to say something that Dan Campbell went for a couple of fourth downs and failed. And he's getting beat up quickly. Just a reminder, going for those fourth downs and being aggressive is what got them there in the first place.
That's true.
You've just, I mean, if those had worked and they beat the 49ers, everybody would have been singing his praises and talking about what a great coach he is. But you got to go with what got you there. And they did. And it didn't work out. And that sucks for them. But that's what got you there. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. And, you know, if you change your philosophy and who you are in the biggest moment in your franchise history, that's a bad move.
Can I,
you
know, juggle,
that's what got you there.
Can I kind of juggle what you just said in both agreement and a slight pushback?
Sure.
The first one that they failed, the first notable one, I mean, the play was perfect, that just he fucked it up by dropping. Like, mm-hmm. That should have worked.
Yep.
Right? What I didn't like for them was when they were down a field goal and they went for it on fourth down, I think you kicked the field goal to tie the game.
That's what I would have done. But again, it's, you know, they lived and died by being super hyper aggressive and just didn't work. And like you said, that first one, oof, that right play call, right decision, bad execution.
That he catches that, the Lions are in the Super Bowl. I guarantee it.
Yeah. And, you know, it was, you play to win the game. That's what he was trying to do. And I can't be mad at it. You know, it's not what I would have done, but you know, he's there and I'm not. And you know, he beat himself up about it. The one thing you could say about Dan Campbell is he wears that emotion on his sleeve.
Yes, he does.
And he loves this team. He loves this game and he wants to win.
And I mean, listen, this team is going nowhere. And yes, you are probably going to lose your offensive coordinator, but you have all this young talent on the team. They got 7 draft picks and like over $60 million in cap space. The team is going to be back and probably hungrier than ever next year. And you can guarantee that because of Dan Campbell. Like I some people want to say this is one and done. And yes, you know what? There's no guarantees you're going to be back in the same position. There never is a guarantee in sports, but I don't think that team's going anywhere. And it's really scary for the Bears, frankly, that they're in our division. I know we started to have this conversation before, but I mean, with that loss, does that in a way make them a little scarier next year? Because they're going to want to avenge that big time.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I do agree with you that this division is going to be tough and the Bears had better step the F up because the Vikings are there. They were a quarterback away from not being a great team, but being a playoff team that
in the mix
in the playoffs, they would have beat out the Packers. They just had no quarterback for a big chunk of the season. And Kirk Cousins either going to be back or they're going to find another option some way, shape, or form. And so they'll be competitive. The Lions are going to be competitive. And you know the Packers are going to be competitive. And if the Bears can come out and do in this offseason what they have the potential to do, not saying they will, the potential is there between potential moves with your draft picks or either the players you pick in those or the capital you get from making the trade and your new offensive coordinator and the cap space you have, like you should be competitive next year and you have the potential and opportunity to be competitive. It just, everybody's got to do the right moves. The front office has to make the right decision. The coaches actually have to have everybody prepared to play and the players got to execute. And if that's the case, the NFC North is going to be the best division in football.
And I just feel like we're at the biggest disadvantage of at least 2 or 3 of those teams. That's what scares me is just, I mean, you already put yourself at a disadvantage. You know, and Matt Eberflus is not better than Matt LaFleur or Dan Campbell. And I know the Bears played the Lions really well this year. I know. But I do have one question, if I may ask.
And I'm going to add in there that Matt Eberflus is not as good as the head coach of the Vikings.
No, he's not. He's the weakest head coach of the four, and it's not even close. It's a country mile. And, you know, again, I referenced the Bears playing the Lions well this year. But here's my question. It's just an honest question, and I don't know the answer. Is it because the Bears personnel matched up well against the Lions? Or did the Bears kind of just catch them at the right time when they were in that somewhat lull the Lions were in that season? I'm just wondering.
A little column A, a little column B. It's matchups and the Bears fare really well against teams that are aggressive, that are trying to make big strikes. And that's what the Lions are. The Lions want to make big strikes and the Bears are able to contain that. You have to be a methodical team. That's why they really struggle against the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Packers run the ball extremely well and they are able to just drive down the field with short and medium passes.
Yep.
And then when the Bears have to counterpunch with, we got to take away the run and we've got to shore up our middle of the defense, that's when they take the top off the ball and beat you deep. And the Bears just aren't matched up well. They match up pretty well with the Vikings, but that was just because the Vikings were decimated with injuries. So, you know, I would argue that Matt Eberflus is the best defensive coordinator in the division.
Sure.
But he is the weakest head coach.
Right, right.
And Shane Waldron is going to have to be the X factor. He's going to have to be one of the better, the benefit is that the offensive coordinator of the Lions is rumored to be, he's going to be the head coach of the Washington Commanders. And it seems like that's what's going to happen. So Shane Waldron is going to have to be right there with Matt LaFleur as the best offensive coordinator in the division for the Bears to come out on top.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, if that's going to be the case. I'm hopeful and I really have my fingers crossed, but you don't know.
No. And
the one benefit you do have is the Bears are going to be playing a last place schedule.
Yeah. I mean, that is something you want to take advantage of for sure. And I mean, even if you do have an easier schedule, if you want the playoffs, you're going to have to beat your division too.
Yeah, you have to.
I mean, you got to win at bare minimum to get in the playoffs, at least 3 games against your division.
Oh, yeah. At least. You have to be at least 500 in that division.
Yeah, yeah.
And preferably better, and preferably having beaten every single team.
Right, exactly.
Not 2 against the Lions, 2 against the Vikings, and 0-2 against the Packers, or
like the Matt Nagy era.
Yeah, like that doesn't work.
Right. I mean, the last division title you won in 2018, and you went 5-1 against the division that year, and you beat everybody. You beat the Lions twice, you beat the Vikings twice, and you clinched against the Packers. So that was the last time you won a game against every team in your division was 2018.
And I'm going to say is, you know, I recognize the Bears need to be better at the wide receiver position.
Mm-hmm.
And, but man, they really need to get a better pass rush. I love Montez Sweat. The Sweat effect was real. And you saw that. But it was mostly with the back seven, your linebackers and your defensive backs. That's where you saw the effect from Montez Sweat. Sure, you got some more pressure on the quarterback because it was better than zero. Like the zero pass rush you had before you brought him in was just ridiculous. And Ngakoue was an absolute bust. But you need somebody on the other side of Montez Sweat to really bring the heat.
Yeah, he can't do it all.
No, because if you have one guy, you can scheme. And I know we saw Jervon Dexter start to come on at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you look for him to improve and be able to collapse the middle of that defense. And that's really where you see the Lovie Smith, Matt Eberflus style cover two defense really shine when you're getting that pressure, that Tommy Harris, Warren Sapp, you know, player that smashes the pocket and forces you to roll out. And you're hoping Jervon Dexter becomes that guy. And there's evidence to say that he might be, but you need that other edge rusher to just really, hammer that home. And, you know, you're in the opportunity now to be able to draft the best edge rusher in this draft with your second first round pick.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I was going to say too, is that if they drafted one really early on, I would not be surprised at all. In fact, I think it would be a pretty smart move.
Yeah, I mean, there's this won't be a draft where there's, you know, where the edge rushers are like number one overall or top five. But there's three really good ones in this draft, and it's Dallas Turner from Alabama, and he's more of a 3-4 outside linebacker, but he's really good. The guy that I'm head over heels with is Jared Verse, who carried Florida State on his back. He's awesome. And then there's Letu Latu from the edge rusher from UCLA, who's really good too.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got two guys right there. And regardless of what you do with that first overall pick, whether you trade back, whether you keep it, you have the opportunity to get who you feel is the best edge rusher in this draft with your second pick. And, you know, if they trade back and they have 9 and 12 or 9 and 6, you still can get the best edge rusher in this draft. If you keep it and draft a quarterback number one, you have the opportunity. And honestly, with that 9 pick, I don't think your top three wide receivers are there. And the way this kind of plays out is I've probably done 100 simulations, and you know, the way it just keeps playing out is those quarterbacks are going to go early, the couple quarterbacks. Then you've got three wide receivers that are going to go top 10, probably top 8. And you've got some offensive linemen. So it's prime for the Bears to be able to take that edge rusher and really, and it's not like they're not good. They're just, you know, there's a lot of times where those top edge rusher is going top three and you are getting value there by them being ranked, you know, 10 to 15 in the top overall picks.
Right.
Oh yeah. Throw in Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. He's going to go high too. So if you're the Bears with that number 9 pick, assuming you stay there, regardless what you do with one, that 9 pick, you're probably staying there. And like I said, is you're probably not getting Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers or Roman Dunze at wide receiver. And you're probably not going to pick an offensive lineman there. I'm not saying they're not good, just might be not a value pick for what you need. Like, you have other positions of greater need. And so you reach a little bit on the edge rusher, but I think it's the right choice. Because the only positions at that number nine spot that are worth drafting there are offensive tackle, quarterback, that one tight end, which I still don't, not big on drafting tight ends that early, wide receiver, cornerback, and edge. And assuming you're bringing back Jalen Johnson, you don't need cornerback. It's either going to be number one overall or Justin Fields is your quarterback, so it won't be there. I think you'll probably draft an offensive lineman, but not that high. And the wide receivers, I think, will be gone. So it just makes sense that you're going edge rusher there.
Yeah, totally.
But there are two Bears things I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is we hired a defensive coordinator. And it's somebody that's not new to us. He used to be a coach on the Bears staff under Lovie Smith. So it is Eric Washington, and he comes from the Lovie Smith tree. And he was the defensive lineman line coach during Lovie's era under Riverboat Ron. And then he was the assistant head coach, defensive line coach of the Buffalo Bills. That means Buffalo really valued him because they made him an assistant coach, which meant that you had to promote him to be able to hire him away. He was also a coach at Northwestern. So again, more ties to the Chicagoland area. And he does have play calling history, but I'm assuming that based on this hire, Matt Eberflus is going to continue the play calling. And this
kinda
guy
seems
is,
that way right now. Yeah.
This guy is going to be the guy that implements the system and helps be a teacher to the young players.
Yeah. I think that's kind of where it's pointing to based on what we're reading. So, I mean,
and I'm not mad at it. We saw the defense be very good under Eberflus, and Washington comes from, you know, background in that cover two system. So it's not like he's not, doesn't know it very well, but he's coached under different systems. So he's going to be able to bring in some outside perspective as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, that's the hope that it can keep building, getting better. I think that adding more talent, obviously, as we alluded to earlier, will obviously help continue make the pass rush better. And if that pass rush becomes truly elite throughout the season, then the job of the secondary is going to get much, much easier. So, you know, you wonder with this new scheme coming in, if you get more pass rush, are you going to blitz more? How's that going to work? And, you know, you're probably not going to have Eddie Jackson next year. So, you know, you're going to be replacing him. And I mean, you know, most of what your defensive foundation is going to be there going forward, you're going to have Brisker, Gordon, Stevenson, Dexter, Sweat. You know, those guys are going to be all back. And then, you know, TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds. So you see who you add. And if you do get another elite pass rusher and, you know, you kind of implement more blitzing to your scheme and you do it effectively, then I think you're going to see an even better defense next year. But I just wonder what kind of play calling is going to happen next year with Matt Eberflus. When you do build this up, are you going to blitz more? Are you going to implement that more in certain situations? I don't know, but I'm sure they're going to be on the same page about it. And I'm sure that during the interviews, they wanted to see who was on the same page with what they were envisioning. So I don't really worry that much about the defense going into next year, just with you, what groundwork you already have in place and the fact that you know it's going to get better.
Yeah, I just want them to, you know, what separates a top five defense from a top 10 defense, that defense around 10, 11, 9, and, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, is that ability to be aggressive when you need to be. The Bears defense was very passive for the most part, and they forced you to make mistakes, and people did. But you need to be able to, especially look at that Green Bay game, the second one, you need to be able to at some point dial up a man coverage and send a blitz in. And especially when you have the opponent backed up to like their 1 yard line or 2 yard line, just go for the throat, go for it, is send the all out blitz, make him make the right read, have your guys cover man and be physical. Is if you look, that's what those Super Bowl winning teams do, is they're contesting those throws underneath him and at the end of the game to break things up. That's what the Bears need to do. And it's not, you don't have to be aggressive the whole time. It's, you just have to pick and choose your spots and make them guess. Are they going to play back? Are they going to come after us and you know, really, really disguise those coverages? Because, you know, the zone does work, but if you're constantly in the zone, people know how to beat it. You know where to go.
Especially if you're not getting pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
Because how many times do we see before the Bears could get any pass rush and the quarterback had all day to throw, they were able to dump off in that zone coverage, which was giving them a lot of cushion. And once you added that pass rush, that added pressure, you were able to make them try to get rid of the ball quicker. You were making the quarterback scramble. It was much tougher to do.
Right. So I'm not worried about the defense, but I would like them to really get aggressive and not just be a tough defense, but be a mean defense.
Yeah. Eat them alive, eat them for lunch. And
bite
I mean,
their kneecaps.
Right. I mean, honestly, my favorite defensive game of the year for the Bears was against the Lions at Soldier Field. I mean, you watch that game and how many times did they get to Jared Goff? How many times did they pick Jared Goff off? How many times did they lay the big hit? And, you know, you saw late in that game when they were down to fourth down, they brought the pressure to Jared Goff. They were all in his face. I mean, that's what I want to see.
And you can be like, well, whatever. It wasn't that big of a deal. Is Jared Goff, the one thing he is known for, is he does not turn the ball over. Like, you know, I know he has, but that's been the hallmark of Jared Goff, is you don't throw interceptions. And the Bears were just forcing him into interceptions left and right.
Yeah, they were.
The other Bears news that I want to talk about was an interesting thing that popped up on the Bears Twitter account. And I don't know if you saw it or not. I'm sure you did.
Oh, is it the Justin Fields thing?
Yeah. It was just an interesting thing that popped up. And I don't know if that means something.
I don't think it means anything.
It's just they put the just JF1 and then highlight reel of Justin Fields. And who knows? Is this some sort of teaser? They're like, hey, we're building on this guy. Is it just somebody threw together a cool highlight reel and they're like, let's just post it? I don't know.
Interactions. I think that's all it is.
Yeah, but it was interesting to see, and it did cause a stir in Bears Twitter.
I mean, remember when they tweeted QB1 with Andy Dalton?
That was the opposite effect.
Do you remember when they brought Mike Glennon, who they just signed, to the draft watch party and drafted Mitch Trubisky after trading up?
That was arguably the most Bears thing the Bears have ever done.
A stupid organization.
I don't like that. Was on Mount Rushmore of dumb things that happened.
Yeah, and that Mount Rushmore's got a lot of faces on it when it comes to the Bears.
And they're all they're all making the Matt Nagy face. Oh.
And one of those has a purple crayon up his nose.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Lisa on the triangle and Ralph with a flute up his nose.
Yeah, so it's you're just like, why? You knew you were drafting Trubisky. It's not like it was a surprise, but you traded up. You were like, that's our guy. We're going for it. And the general manager went to the owner and was like, that's who we're going for. And let's bring our new guy in. Why would you do that?
Yeah, so that's dumb. Why it's so dumb. And that's why that's just why I don't read much into it. I really don't.
Is there anything else Bears you want to talk about?
No, not really. Not really.
It's going to be a long couple of months.
Yes, it is.
I saw somebody tweet, probably the smartest thing I've ever seen, and it was like, Bears Twitter is a whole lot better when you mute the following phrases. Caleb Williams, Justin Fields.
I'm on the verge of doing so.
I'm like, it's, I'm at the point, I have a preference of what I would want to see done, but I don't care anymore.
I don't either.
I just don't. It's just
I'm tired of talking about it.
wake me up when it happens.
Yeah, whatever happens.
I mean, you know, if we don't know until the draft night, that's going to be cool theatrics for everybody but us Bears fans. Because we're all going to be neurotic messes.
Yeah.
So, where do you want to go from here?
Can we talk about the fact that the Blackhawks have now lost a franchise record in road games in nearly 100 years of existence?
You know, last year the Blackhawks finished with a terrible record and ended up with the number one overall pick in the draft lottery.
They did.
This team is significantly worse than that team.
Oh yeah, I mean, especially, I mean, this isn't surprising. This isn't like, wow, how are they losing?
No, this is the
You're
plan. This is the plan.
right. You are a rebuilding team with your young phenom out with a broken jaw and your other two top scorers also out. I mean, what the hell is even going on with Andres Athanasiou? He's been out and just been out. We know
Notes.
Taylor Hall's out for the year, but
Yeah. But honestly, is Connor Bedard was a pleasant surprise and a wrinkle for this organization because I'm sure they didn't expect this. And, you know, in their mind, it would have been awesome if Connor Bedard, you could somehow put him in Rockford and just be a terrible NHL franchise and not start his clock. But he's just so good, you can't do that.
no.
And I think in some ways it's probably a relief to them that he got injured because you were still a terrible team losing a lot of games, but he buoyed you a little bit. He provided some level of offense. And right now you've got nada.
No, you have no goal scoring whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean this is probably a worse team than last year.
Oh, it is. You don't have Taser Kane on this team.
And you know, in the Athletics power rankings, you are dead last. Dead last.
Yeah. Yikes. It's it's expected at this point, and they're not going to win many more games, even when Bedard comes back. You're just not going to.
You know what's wild is this team is like so bad. So bad. They still have one more, or they still have like the same record pretty much, same number of points as San Jose. That's how bad San Jose is.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
I mean, let's see. We have the trade deadline about a little over a month away. And we've re-signed to a 2-year extension, Dickinson, 2-year extension to Foligno, 2-year extension to Mrazek. So probably the odds of them getting moved very low.
No, you're not trading anybody of note.
So honestly, I'm just like looking through, you know, who could you trade? Colin Blackwell? Tyler Johnson?
And you'd get what, packing peanuts for
Yeah,
that?
I don't, I mean, there's really just nothing to trade.
And at this point, you need to have bodies on a roster.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wonder if the Blackhawks, this is an opportunity to just add players as like a salary dump to get draft picks where you're giving salary cap space to a team that's trying to get somebody of note. And it for you, you've got the cap space to absorb it. And You just need bodies.
You're saying you're taking on a contract in exchange for draft picks to give a team salary relief.
Yes.
Yeah.
And providing you with somebody that's got a pulse and plays professional hockey.
One of the Blackhawks is going to sign Phil Kessel.
Oh, Phil Kessel. But you know, I recognize that a few years down the road, there's probably going to be a pretty bright light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the whole plan.
But man, the path to get there is real dark, real dark.
It's a long path.
I mean, because Oliver Moore is at least a year away. Sam Rinzell's probably 2 years away. Drew Commesso's 2-ish years away. And who the hell knows what the hell is going on with Lucas Reichel?
Yeah, it's not looking good.
And I mean, I feel like at this point, the solution has to be an off-season solution, right?
Yes.
Like, there's going to be no light, you know, light going on mid-season. This is going to have to be an off-ice, off-season type solution.
Yeah, it's really hard for me seeing the light just suddenly turn on.
But I don't want to give up on him yet.
I don't either, but it's not looking good right now.
I mean, he's going to be, a restricted free agent at the end of the season?
I think so.
Maybe you just sign him to a cheap deal, like that cheap extension, and, you know, it doesn't hurt you if he just sucks, but if he turns it around, that's awesome. But you've got a bunch of guys that are going to be free agents. And I don't know who from this list you consider bringing back. Joey Anderson. Probably.
He's a fourth liner. Maybe.
I mean, that's the goal. The problem with the Blackhawks is they're taking a whole lot of bottom six guys and making them top six guys out of necessity.
Right.
And that's just not a good place to be.
And no.
I mean, I like Joey Anderson on the team if he's, you know, a fourth line guy, but, and that would be the goal. Like, I would kind of bring him back. Cole Gutman. Did you bring him back?
Nah, give or take.
Yeah, I'm on.
I mean, nothing's telling me you must bring him back. Like, it's not a woo.
No,
can't
this,
let this guy go.
This whole list I'm about to read, there's not a single name on there that's a must bring back. It's guys that you're like, okay. I mean, probably a lot of it depends on the money. If you ask me, Cole Gutman back, it's not quite 50-50. It's probably a little closer to bring him back. Maybe 55-45, 58-42. I wouldn't be mad, but if they let him go, I wouldn't be up in arms with pitchforks. Lucas Reichel. I think there's just I think there's too much talent to just let him go. I think you gotta try to find a solution. Colin Blackwell.
I mean, yeah, probably if you want center depth.
Yeah, I would probably lean towards bringing him back. Tyler Johnson.
I think he's a veteran, but
I probably lean towards no.
Yeah, like
he hasn't been bad. I just
13 points, 9 goals.
Yeah, I lean towards no. Mackenzie Entwistle. I probably lean towards no on him.
Yeah. Not much there. 5 points.
Rhys Johnson.
Nah.
Boris Kachuk.
Meh.
Taylor Radish.
It's kind of funny because with Taylor Radish, sometimes you see things from him where you're like, oh, maybe he could kind of be a guy. You know, not a guy, but you know, something, but I'll put that as a maybe.
Okay. Jared Tenorti.
Nah.
Like, I mean, at times he's been good. Just you feel like the young players are going to just lap him really quick.
Right, right.
So I just think it does not work out. And Nikita Zaitsev.
Just another meh. And it just, I mean, I have no strong feelings here.
He's a guy that, I mean, we brought him here as a salary cap dump. And I think he's exceeded the expectations we had. That's not a lot.
Right.
It's a bunch of meh. So there's these guys, you're like, that's a good thing about being bad. When guys come up for contract and if they don't bring him back, you go, okay, all right. It's just very factual.
Do you know who the leading scorer on the Blackhawks is in terms of points, not named Connor Bedard?
Don't say Corey Perry.
No.
I don't know.
Jason Dickinson, who's actually
he's had a good year,
pretty well this year. Yeah.
I was happy. The three guys that I think you needed to give extensions to, you did.
Mm-hmm.
And not that they're world beaters. Like Mrazek is, he's a fine goalie. He's not an elite goalie, but you didn't pay him elite goalie money.
No, you didn't. And I mean, the fact that he's got a 91 save percentage on this team, it's pretty good. I mean, all things considering.
And you probably paid him more per year than he would have gotten on the open market. Is you paid him because you have the cap space and you need a veteran goalie to be here.
Right. He's not necessarily going to be your regular in futures to come, but I mean, you have a veteran available.
I mean, next year he's like, unless Soderblom just figures it out.
I don't know about that.
I don't think so either. I think he got his opportunity and just did not work out. So I'm expecting he's probably going to be the backup goalie next year as well. So Mrazek will probably get the lion's share of the work next year. The hope is that Drew Commesso is up that second year.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I'm looking at Arvid Soderblom's numbers. The goals against average is 407.
Just he's been a little rough this year.
Yeah, and save percentage 874. Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got goalies in the pipeline.
You do.
They're just far down. So, you know, I'm hoping the Commesso is that guy in 2 years. That's the, you know, it's Mrazek and Commesso, and you ease that transition is throughout the year, you know. You start giving the heavier load to Commesso and ease him into the league. That's the hope.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it might be a little aggressive, but that's probably your fingers crossed moment.
You would think, man, you're talking right now and I'm looking at these stats just, oh boy. You know who, you know, Seth Jones is top five in points on this team.
Yeah, he eats up like half of their salary cap too.
Yeah, no kidding. So your other, you get Nick Foligno is four with 18. Seth Jones is 5 with 15. You know who number 3 is? You know, 1 is Bedard, 2 is Dickinson, 4 is Foligno, 5 is Jones. You know who number 3 is?
Don't say Corey Perry.
No.
I don't know. Who is it?
It's Phil Kuryshev.
Okay.
So your top 3 scorers are centers. Just pointing that out. I it doesn't hold as much weight on this team, but though I do think Bedard might have a future as a winger. But I mean, the thing is that Jason Dickinson, over the next few weeks, he's going to need to record 8 points to tie himself with Bedard. And there's a break coming up.
Yeah. I think Bedard is going to come back sooner than that estimated time frame.
I hope so, man. He was the reason to watch.
Because
it was him.
The one saving grace of the jaw injury is he can skate.
Right.
And the fear is when you're out that long is getting your legs under you and getting conditioned. He hasn't missed a beat on that.
No, he hasn't.
And they did surgery on the jaw. So it's not like they're waiting. So he's probably got some sort of pin or, you know, something in there stabilizing it. So it's just once that jaw heals, like it's probably he's more likely to break the jaw somewhere else than the spot where it was, because it'll be stronger than it was. So I expect him sooner than later, because you don't have to ramp him up. It's just, all right, it's healed, go back out there. I mean, he'll probably have a cage on his face, but.
Well, and you know, this is an injury where it's not like, oh man, it's a shoulder. Is he going to have shoulder issues? It's not an ACL or an ankle or anything. It's a fluky jaw injury.
Yeah. I mean, the only concern I guess I would have is he losing weight because he can't eat solid foods? And I'm sure the nutritionists are pumping him up with, you know, liquid nutrition.
All right, Connor. Time for your nutrition shake. It's just the most gnarly looking thing in a blender.
He's like, I don't hurt there.
You just, the blender just makes that really, really just like ear covering, like,
yeah, the you just metal squealing.
You're grinding things in there.
Come on, Connor. Here comes the airplane.
Here comes the airplane. Oh, poor Connor. I mean, he's a tough kid. He's, you know, he wants nothing more than to get back out on the ice and start playing again. I mean, he's going to do everything he can to come back as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's going to be medical telling him when he can go, because if you ask him, he'll probably be ready to go anytime.
Oh yeah, if there was a game tonight and it started in 5 minutes, and if it was up to him, he'd be getting those pads on and getting ready to go out there. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely.
Come on, Connor, you didn't have your second dessert shake. No.
Oh God, I'm just picturing him just doing commercials for like old ladies shakes afterwards. It's like, my favorite was the oatmeal banana.
It came in a vacuum sealed bag like this.
He's like, all you got to do is snip the bag in one corner and just drink away with a straw.
The box literally just says, just add water. Nothing else.
He pours it a little glass and ding 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 with a spoon. It's like a Metamucil.
That ain't Lipton iced tea. It's a little thicker than that.
He's like, it tastes great. It's nutritious and it keeps you regular.
That's gonna suck though. That jaw injury just ugh. I'm just so mad that, like, of course that happened. Of course it had to.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like, I don't consider what happened a dirty play. I just considered it a very unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't at all. And I'm sure the dude that did it feels bad. Like, I mean, you know, it was not dirty. And yeah, I'm glad that they went after him, but
you have to protect your teammate. And yeah. I mean, it says a lot about your team and its culture and what kind of guy Connor Bedard is when your team goes out of its way to do that kind of thing.
You know, it's wild for a team that's this terrible. I feel good about the culture.
Oh, I do too. I mean, they don't go out there and just phone things in. That's the last thing they do.
No,
I mean, they're just completely void of talent.
Yeah, when you watch the games, it is not them quitting. It's not them. They're just not talented enough. They're hustling. They're trying. They're just not talented. The talent gap is especially when you see just absolutely like a McDavid line where you're like, good God, just, you know, like you see the talent discrepancy, but they're hustling. They're trying. There's no quitting them. And that's the good news is Luke Richardson is keep giving him some talent and infuse talent in there. And I think you're going to have good things.
And, you know, I mean, even look at a lot of these, I mean, they've been doing nothing but losing games lately, but you look at a number of those losses, they were not all of them, obviously, but a number of them were close. I mean, they lost 1-0 against Calgary the other night. They lost a close one against a really good Canucks team where they just couldn't put the biscuit in the basket. But, you know, they didn't lose to the Canucks or to Calgary, like, you know, 6-0 or anything like that. And sure, they've been blown out a number of times. And yeah, it's going to happen. But yeah,
I mean, they got shut up by that Oilers 3-0. But like, you know, it was the power play and they just couldn't mount any offense. And I thought they did a good job of keeping that pretty close.
They did everything they could.
I mean, it's the problem is like they can't score. Zero against the Flames, zero against the Oilers, two against the Kraken, zero against the Canucks.
And it seems like some of the games they do score in are the games they actually get blown out in. Because the Kraken kicked their butts the other day.
Yeah, that one was a tough one. But they scored zero against the Sabres. Only two against the Sharks, and that was in the shootout. One against the Stars, one against the Jets, one against the Oilers. It just can't put the biscuit in the basket.
Yeah.
Want to talk a little Bulls and then wrap it up with some baseball?
Sure.
I think the most apt way to describe the Bulls is they're mid as fuck.
Oh yeah. I mean,
this is just a mid team and it's tough. And, like, you know, sure, you just beat the Trailblazers, but so you beat the Trailblazers, you lose against the Lakers, you lose against the Suns, you beat the Grizzlies, beat the Raptors. That's pretty much you're playing 500 basketball.
Yeah, exactly. Mid as fuck, as you said. The Suns one was, you know, you had that massive lead and then it just, you lost all energy and steam. And how many games in a row have they lost against the Suns? Seems like a lot.
I don't know, but I can't remember the last time they beat them. But, I mean, you got the trade deadline about a little over a week away. And I don't know what you do. You know,
doesn't seem like the Zach LaVine interest is there around the league. And even if you do sell him, you have that gut feeling at the moment right now that it's going to be for pennies on the dollar, all things considered.
I mean, you're hearing maybe Detroit. And
be such a weird, I don't know.
like what do you get, Cade Cunningham? Like, I don't
I
know.
mean, if they got Cade Cunningham,
I just, you have to, the trade has to make sense. I don't think you just dump Zach LaVine. It's salary dump. Like, this team under Arturas Karnisovas, they have not wanted to lose players for nothing. You could say a lot about, you know, where they are, but they've not wanted to lose players for nothing. And
well,
so,
and that's why they had to re-sign Zach when they did, because I still think it was the right move to re-sign him, or else he would have walked for nothing.
Right. But it's why you re-signed Vooch. And it's why I think you're probably going to likely sign DeMar to an extension in the offseason. Unless you trade him. And honestly, I think that's probably the move. Is I don't think you're going to get fair value for Zach LaVine. I don't think you're going to get that at this point.
Probably not.
So then why wouldn't you trade DeMar DeRozan? Because running this team back again is just stupid. You've got to switch something up. And
right.
And DeMar, this is probably, I mean, this is your last opportunity to move him. And I think re-signing him is probably the wrong thing, because you're going to have to pay him pretty darn good money.
And he is no spring chicken at this point.
No. So, you know, I think probably trading DeMar makes the most sense, is because you avoid that whole negotiation with him of having to re-sign him or risk losing him for nothing. You get something for him. And it's not going to be a ton, but it frees up cap space for you to do something. And this is going to be, and the bad part is, this is a terrible off season for free agents. So, like, you know, maybe the trading DeMar is the right move.
You gotta do something. Like you said, you gotta do something.
And honestly, I think whatever moves you have to make, you have to optimize this team to be able to help in the development of Coby White and P. Will. I think that's got to be your move. Is, you know, Patrick has been, there's been times where you're like, this is the dude. There was even a stretch where you're like, this is the dude. And then he's just been so inconsistent since that point.
You see the brief stretches, and then you just...
Yeah, he even got benched recently. Like, it's... So, Pat Williams, is you just gotta... I think you've gotta figure out what you can do to optimize his growth and consistency in this offense. And if that's moving DeMar, okay. If it's, if it's moving Zach, was that the common denominator? Is no Zach, he played better? I don't know. I mean, but, you know, your future players are him and Coby White. So you've gotta optimize those players.
Absolutely. I mean, the path to a championship is just in another galaxy right now for that team.
Oh, absolutely. This is, I mean, look at the standings, and they're the ninth seed. So mid. I mean, you are light years away from that one of the top six teams, and you're bunched right up there with these, you know, Miami, who is really in a funk right now, but they're a better team than you.
Yes.
And you, record wise, you're there with Orlando and Atlanta. And Atlanta has more talent than you. They're just, and Orlando has more talent than you. Could you beat either one of them? Maybe.
Sure, I mean, you can, but again, the end game is what?
I do want to play a game.
Okay.
Who finishes the season, their entire season, with more wins? The Pistons or the Lions?
The Lions had, would they win 13 games or 12 games?
The Lions won, I think they won 11 in the regular season.
Was it 11? Are you counting playoffs?
I'm going to count playoffs.
Okay.
Yeah, so Detroit won 12 games, and then they won two playoff games. So it's 14.
Okay.
And the Pistons won their last game, so they're on a one-game win streak.
They pulled a massive upset against the number one West team in Kansas, OKC. And on the day the Lions lost the NFC Championship. So insert Thanos meme. Did the Pistons win? Yes. What it cost? The Lions' trip to the Super Bowl.
So you're on pace for like 11 wins, 10, 11 wins if you're Detroit.
Imagine an NBA team winning less games than your local football team.
Yes. And the, you know, 82 games versus 17. It's wild.
Yeah.
The Pistons are terrible.
Yeah, that's brutal. And it's a good question. I mean, it's legitimately possible.
I mean, they could also have less wins than Michigan, too.
That, too. I mean, it's just the thing about the Pistons is like, no, they're not built as a good team. But like, look at all those young guys they've drafted over the past few years. When you have guys like Cade Cunningham, like, it's like, you might not be good, but did you really expect a team with this amount of young talent to be this historically terrible? It's crazy.
No. No.
I don't know, man. That's nuts. And they've been screwed out of some good draft position, too, like last year.
Yeah, well, that's the name of the game, you know. It is, you know, there's a lot of luck involved in things.
Yep.
All right, should we wrap this up with some baseball talk?
Sure.
There's nothing with the White Sox.
Well, didn't they just hire a new TV announcer?
Oh, you're right. You're right. I forgot. They did. Let's just talk about him. They got a guy. They got a guy. I don't know anything about him.
I don't either. I don't think, wasn't he, cause he's got an ESPN gig too, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's done stuff for like different sports. I don't know what he did to win this job.
My guess is that he met Jerry's criteria.
Be a yes man.
Be a yes man. Don't laugh. Don't have fun. Carry my water and lick my boots.
Yeah, John Schifrin.
And hey, wish him well. I'm sure he's a talented guy. I've never heard him before.
When you go to Google and you type John and then S and then start to type his name, he's not the first one that pops up. So Yeah. I hope he does well. He's 39 years old. And he's going to be working with Stoney. And he lied and said that he was excited about Jerry Reinsdorf's passion for the team. Unless he was talking about the passion for making money off the team.
I think what he meant to say is he loves his passion for David Eckstein.
He's called select Saturday and Sunday MLB radio broadcasts for ESPN since 2022. And he does NCAA basketball, football, baseball, and softball games, as well as NBA G League and Summer League.
So he's been around quite a bit. He's done a number of sports gigs.
He's going to call a majority of the Sox games, but does not have an exact number.
You think Len will still do those Sunday games or whatever?
I don't know. He was also a pitcher for Dartmouth. Don't we know?
Yeah, I did read that. Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did they know each other?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. Because I think they were a few years apart, but
If you go from Dartmouth baseball, you probably keep up with people.
Oh, sure. Like if you're a notable alumni, I'm sure you're connected.
Yeah, so that's I wonder. That'd be interesting. but yeah, the White Sox fans don't seem so excited about it.
I think the sole reason for like the lack of enthusiasm is just people don't really know much about him. Who knows? Maybe he ends up being really good. I don't know. We'll see. I kind of thought Connor McKnight would have had a decent shot at the gig, but I guess
finalist.
Not. Yeah. I thought Connor McKnight would have been a good choice.
Yeah. He's another very analytical one. But I think a lot of it is that folks liked Jason Benetti.
Yes.
And the fact that his departure was so sudden that
clearly out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, publicly out of nowhere. Who knows what was going on behind the scenes?
And to go to a rival team too.
Yeah, it's. I think unless they brought, AJ Pruszynski in or something, somebody that was already like known commodity and like a total White Sox guy, a homer guy. If it wasn't somebody like that, I think it's a hard sell. And I hope Schifrin turns out to be good. Mm-hmm. He's got a Hall of Fame level partner, so if it takes him a while to handle things, he's got a buoy right there that it's going to help him along.
Right.
And he does have the experience doing it before, so it's not like it's new. I hope for the best. It's going to be tough though, because this is a bad team that he's going to be going to. And it's going to be hard to toe the company line when you're on pace to lose 100 games.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it's, working your way to try to be enthusiastic, upbeat, that's going to be a challenge for him too, is, finding that kind of White Sox quote homerism. If things aren't particularly going well.
Yeah. I mean, if your team is playing bad in April, May, like, okay, you can deal with that. You can handle that. If your team is just still bad come September, like that's a heavy, heavy burden to carry and still be an announcer hyping the game up.
And think about this too, like what was good for Jason Benetti when he started, because when he started, the White Sox were not good, but he was that hometown kid. Like he grew up rooting and being a White Sox fan. So he already had that hometown connection, that emotional connection that could help him naturally come within the White Sox fan base, because he was really already a member of one. It'll be harder for someone who's kind of a, I guess you could say, neutral party in a way.
Right. Other side of town, we actually have a signing.
We do. Hector Neris. That was a really nice pickup for Jed because he really needed to bring in another elite bullpen arm. And, you know, Hector Neris might, okay, he might not be elite, but he's very good. And he's
very
coming off a really good year last year. Even if he regresses a little bit, he can still put up good numbers.
Yeah, he's very good coming from a winning team and has postseason experience.
Yeah, those are all good things.
So it's, and the deal is really fair. You, especially when you consider David Robertson just got a 1 year, $11.5 million contract.
And he's 39 years old.
Yeah. He's 4 years older than Hector Neris. And last year, Neris's ERA was 1.71 versus Robertson's 3.03, and you got him for on a 1 year, $9 million deal. I thought that was a great signing.
Well, it kind of goes with the Cubs' MO is they don't like to give big money to relievers. The last time they did was Craig Kimbrell, but you look around that and, you know, a lot of their bullpens have just been built with a combination of veterans. They get a good value and guys they just find within the organization. So, you know, no, they didn't pay $100 million for Josh Hader. As effective as Josh Hader would have been as an addition to this bullpen, you knew the Cubs weren't going to pay for that kind of thing. You just knew it.
Right. But, you know, I think this was a solid deal. I mean, sure, he's on the back nine of his career, but, you know, he still has something in the tank. He had a good season last year.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, no, I mean, and I was getting a little concerned because relievers were starting to go off the board, but yeah, the Cubs stepped in and made this move and feels good to have a little bit of that insurance in the bullpen with another experienced arm.
But one of the people that, you know, there was a lot of rumble about with the Cubs potentially signing, ended up signing with a division rival. So Rhys Hoskins ended up signing with the Milwaukee Brewers. I don't like that. But
I'm just annoyed he went to the Brewers.
Yeah, I'm fine if the Cubs didn't sign him. It's just I didn't want him to go to the Brewers.
You know he's gonna slug over 1,000 against the Cubs. You just know it.
But it makes you feel like the Cubs feel like Michael Busch is gonna be their first baseman.
And that move better work, man. That's all I'm gonna say. Better work.
I mean, here's the thing, is the fear is that Michael Busch is a quadruple A player. Because there's nothing else for him to prove in minor leagues.
Right.
He won the minor leagues. It's can he translate that into the majors?
Right. And there might be a little PTSD from the likes of like Zach McKinstry in recent years, though I think it's fair to say Busch has a higher ceiling than McKinstry. But, you know, we're wondering the same thing about Matt Mervis, too. Is that the same case? Is just another 4A player? And I think it's natural to worry that. I thought the trade was very interesting when they made it, but they're putting an awful lot of stock into it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, you've got options at first base. Not a ton right now, but should you make the signing of Cody Bellinger, that, you know, you've got options to play first base. So if he does fail or if he does have struggles, you're not forcing him to sit in there and just take that abuse for the whole season.
Right.
There's still quite a few. I mean, we're getting close to pitchers and catchers reporting. We're like mm-hmm. 2-3 weeks away. And there's still quite a few notable free agents that are left on the market.
Yeah, and I would not be surprised if this Bellinger stuff, I mean, it could end tomorrow. It could end after the Super Bowl. I don't know. But at this rate, would you be surprised if it ended after the Super Bowl? I wouldn't.
I wouldn't. but I'm going to throw a name out there that I don't love the idea, but I also don't hate it.
Okay.
Justin Turner.
Yeah. I really liked that idea last year. Really, really wanted him last year. And this year, I don't know if the fit's as there, and he's another year older, but I wouldn't necessarily hate it either.
You know, like, I think the talent's there. He just, I don't think he can play that third base every day, but he doesn't need to. He's, I mean, you still have Madrigal, you still have Wisdom. You've got people. I just don't want any of those guys being the regular. And Justin Turner, even if he's not playing every day, coming off the bench to pinch hit, I like that veteran bat as a pinch hitter.
Right.
So I'm warming to the idea, and I agree with you. I think it made more sense last year, but I think it could make sense this year because you've got some versatility there. It's like I said, you've got Madrigal, you've got Wisdom. Bush can play over there in a pinch. I don't like his defense over there, but he can play. And Justin Turner, so you're not screwed with injury or if needing more veteran days, and he does give you that veteran presence and, you know, pretty darn good bat. And I don't, he's not, you're not going to sign into a long-term deal. It'll be a 1 year, a 1-1, and not, you know, life altering money.
Right.
So I think that's gotta be at least on the table.
Yeah, I would think so.
I mean, even at his age, it's still probably a better regular everyday option over Madrigal or Wisdom. I mean, sure,
yeah,
he's
I
not
mean,
going to have that Wisdom power, but he's also not going to have those Wisdom strikeouts.
Right. And Madrigal was really good at third last year, surprisingly, and can make contact, but he's got no power.
None.
And it's really not very ideal to have a middle infield type hitting player at the corner positions, because typically the corner positions on the infield are power hitting run producers.
Yeah, you're absolutely going to this year have more home runs from second and short than you will first and third. And that is just not in the history of baseball. That's just not normal.
No, it's not. I mean, really, if you look at the Cubs roster right now, you know, Cody Bellinger's a free agent. And you can look and say, okay, we don't really know what Madrigal is going to be in terms of position right now. I mean, if he were to play third, you would argue he is the number one power hitter. Of the infield, but if you don't really know, then the one that's guaranteed is Dansby Swanson at shortstop.
Yep.
So there's a lot of things to figure out here.
Yeah, I'm I'm not happy about where I'm not nervous about where they are, but I'm not happy either.
I want to see some more drastic improvement, because we know right now that the team is not good enough. As it stands right now, it's just simply not good enough.
Right. I mean, if you add a Bellinger and a Justin Turner, that goes a huge long way into improving your roster.
Yes, absolutely. But you need to do it.
You know, would I love them to sign another starting pitcher? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if that'll happen. And I don't know if you've heard the rumored numbers that Blake Snell's camp is asking for.
I have.
And versus what the Yankees offered him.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's true, but if it's true, wow.
It's oceans apart.
Yeah, they're not even in the same, you know, stratosphere.
No.
Yeah. It's the per year numbers are not terribly different. So essentially, for anybody that's listening that didn't see it, the Yankees apparently, according to rumors, offered Snell six-year $150 million contract. And Blake Snell's camp countered with 9 years, $270 million.
That's a big difference in those years,
especially
for a pitcher.
Yeah, per year, 25 versus 30. You could probably find some common ground, but that's 6 year versus 9 year and 150 versus 270. That is huge difference. That's ridiculous.
Right. And it's not like Blake Snell is 26, 27, right? I mean, he's a little older than that, I believe.
And he's coming off, he's coming off an injury.
Right.
So Blake Snell is 31.
Exactly. Yeah. He's over 30.
So you're not going to give him 9 years.
Yeah. You're going to have him pitch until he's 40 on your team. Yeah. I don't know about that.
But you know, Jordan Montgomery's still out there. And so, I mean, there are some names out there, and there's no way the Cubs, if the Blake Snell camp is wants $30 million a year over 9 years, the Cubs are going to go, nope. There's a 0% chance that they're doing that.
Yeah, no.
And Jordan Montgomery is a similar age. I think he's right around that age. He's over 30 though too. And it's looking like Matt Chapman to Toronto, probably, most likely.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
So I don't know. I don't know who else fits in the, you know, in the white or the Cubs outlook for the season.
Well, and that's why I still can't help but wonder if there's going to be a big trade on the way.
I mean, that's a possibility, but I would assume that trades aren't going to happen until, you know, once you get guys in a camp.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, there have been some trades. Jorge Polanco just got traded to the Mariners. I mean, Blake Snell got traded to the Dodgers.
Trying to see if there's a list of the best remaining MLB free agents.
And I mean, it's, you know, it, kind of going back to the White Sox for a minute too. We keep hearing these rumblings, rumors. What's going to happen with Dylan Cease? And it's almost feeling like not quite there because it's not the offseason in the NFL yet. But it's kind of like the Caleb Williams, Justin Fields. What's going to happen? Is he going to get traded? Blah 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 blah.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get traded. I think there's too many, you know, maybe at the trade deadline. I just don't think he's going to happen before that.
I mean, from what it seems like, is the White Sox asking price is really high,
and it should
and teams are just not.
Yeah, I get why teams would balk at that price. But I also understand why the White Sox are going to ask for everything.
Well, of course. Yeah. They're not going to try to lowball them. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you know what is right now? It's an unknown. You don't know what he's going to bounce back and look like. And
right.
If he comes out and looks fire for the first couple months of the season, then yeah, people are going to start be willing. You're going to have multiple teams willing to pay what the White Sox want.
Oh yeah.
And, to have a pitcher that is that caliber with that young, with that many years of control left? Yeah, of course you're going to pay. But if he struggles, then the White Sox are either going to have to bite the bullet and accept what they can accept, or, you know, wait till the off season. Honestly, they're going to have the best idea of how he's going to project, because they have him in their own house. So looking at the best available free agents, Bellinger, Chapman, Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, Jorge Soler. I don't think there's any chance he comes to the Chicago Cubs.
No, I don't see the fit.
Justin Turner, still there. JD Martinez, I don't see that fit. Tim Anderson, nope, that's not a fit either.
There's been no rumors about him.
Nothing, just nothing, which is wild.
I forget he's even a free agent at times.
Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, you forget about him too.
I know. I wonder if I'm surprised he just didn't hang it up. The dude's got so much money, and are you gonna, at age 35, are you gonna go try to find a new team?
I guess he's trying, or hoping the Dodgers re-sign him again.
I mean, it's very telling that he has given so much to that franchise, and with how much money that they've poured out this offseason, they didn't, or they don't, you know, they haven't signed him.
Yeah, you're definitely right.
So that just tells me that that dude is cooked. Gary Sanchez, not interested.
Remember when he was a thing, like a legitimate thing?
I do. Michael Taylor. I mean, that's a possible name if Bellinger doesn't work out, having a veteran center fielder.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, I don't love it. I'm just saying that.
It's not a bad player, but yeah.
It would be a sorely disappointing consolation prize to
right
Bellinger.
Right, right.
Michael Brantley retired, right?
Yes.
I'll throw a name out there. You're not going to like this name. Tommy Pham.
No.
Gio Urshela. No. Oh, that's first base, second base, first base. Yeah, that's really it. I mean, Ryu is an available pitcher, but dude's like 37 years old.
Yeah, he's up there.
I don't know. The Cubs, if they do some additions, I think Bellinger possibly, and then bargain basement shopping for the rest of it.
I still have that feeling there's going to be a significant trade.
That's a possibility.
You have MLB Pipeline said the Cubs have more top 100 prospects than any other team the other day.
Yeah, and you're not gonna bring most all of them to the team.
No,
there's not. You're gonna have. You're going to have an issue with, somebody's path blocked. You're
mm-hmm.
going to have some guys that just fizzle out or injured. And so strike while the iron is hot.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth, because you remember a few years ago, the two big names in the farm system were Brennan Davis and Braylon Marquez.
Yeah.
We've seen what happened there.
I feel so bad about Brennan Davis.
Yeah. It's the back is just a killer.
And he's hit that age now where it, you know, you don't expect him to make it.
It's too bad.
He's 24. You know, I did not know for the longest time that he was Reggie Theus's son.
Yeah, he is.
That'd have been a super cool story. But yeah, I just think he's cooked. And which is just such a bummer. Because imagine if he just had a turnaround, how awesome that Cubs farm system would be if Brennan Davis just turns it around and it's like, I am healthy. Raw.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I mean, I remember watching him at two home runs in the Futures game a few years ago.
Yep.
Didn't seem all that long ago. Really wasn't in all hindsight.
Yeah. But you just look at the numbers and just how they deteriorate quick.
Yeah.
But you know, that's life. That is life. Yeah, I mean, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends, that would grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, swirskysports.com, ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter/X. Or alexanderjpatcreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...